Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
I'm Chad Turnbull.
Und ich bin Elke de la Sota.
And we brought two Catalan wines, Bogatel from Terra Alta and El Raval from Montsant, to the United States. Both wines are organic and voted best buys. We also use fourth generation Catalan winemakers.
Chad and I are very proud supporters of Jason Colucci and the Morning After Show. The same integrity that Jason brings to his show, we bring in our wines. To purchase or for more infos, just click on the link, Savorian Wines.
Hey, everybody. We're here today, the morning after. Beautiful Sunday. I think this might be one of the last perfect Sundays that we have. For the season. I just want to jump into the show. This show is probably show six, and everyone that's been on has been a great guest, but I feel like now the show has gotten its stride, and everyone I've attracted to it are people that I really respect, and whether they're own restaurants or chefs or in the procurement department, I'm really proud of today's show, and it's taken show six. I really want to thank a lot of other people who have been tuning in on iTunes. Now, if you go on iTunes Podcast and you have an iPhone, you click on Podcast, you click on Arts, you click on Food, and then it'll say what's hot or what's new and noteworthy. Now, the morning after was popping up as at number one, and I was grabbing everyone's iPhone this past 2 weeks and and rating it. Now, I only know about 10 people, so I got to about number 10, and everyone else I really appreciate. I think we had 30 reviews. We went to number one, and we dropped to like number 30. Then we went to a whole other level of review. It was just weird. I couldn't figure it out. So we contacted Apple. Jim Cook, Steve Jobs is no longer there, as everybody knows. Trying to get in touch and try to figure out how they do the reviewing, because it gives a legitimacy to the show. And there are over 1,000 podcasts that are given to iTunes for people to listen to, specifically Food. Now, we beat Martha Stewart. Woo. And we beat NPR. Now, I love both of those programs, but we did a couple of days we're on top of them. Also, I wanted to give an apology to my dad, Albert Colucci. Now, I don't want to get emotional here, but I've been kind of a flaky son over the past few weeks, and it's tough to get him on the phone. He's kind of avoiding me. And I know he listens to the show. It's that Italian thing where you you pretend like, you know, you're not listening. You're sort of totally cut him off. So, Dad, I apologize for not being there the week of the hurricane to help you out with setting up the building and the house stuff. I just wanted to say I love you, and Al Colucci, I apologize, and I'll call you after the show, but I wanted to say it on the air. I really feel bad about it. I don't want to get all upset, but I'm about to. So, okay, moving on. Also, we have on an array of amazing individuals. We have Chef David Burke is going to be our first guest. I have Chris Baer from Brooklyn Lauder. Chris Baer is a chef who has worked all over the country. I don't know if anyone has ever popped their head in Brooklyn Lauder. It's on Flatbush in the corner of 6th Avenue, and they have prepared foods, curated cheeses from all over the country. Ed from Ed's Lobster Bar, Ed McFarlane. We serendipitously went to the same high school, Monsignor Farrell in Staten Island, Via Fidelis. Katie Howard, who is she's a part of the Morning After. She is our art critic, but she's sort of our culture critic. She is going to talk about our next week's guest, Monkey Bar. They have a mural there, and she's going to talk a little bit about that. Then a friend, a person who I love, and he calls me every year on my birthday, Bruce Funk. He's in studio, and he's going to talk about his company, and he's also going to talk about the progression of the meat industry over the past 30 years. I want to go on to my first guest right away, Chef David Burke. Now, first, I wanted to thank him. We had my mom's 60th birthday at his restaurant, David Burke's Fromagerie, in I think it was in Alpine, New Jersey. I'm not exactly sure the exact location, but it was an amazing. It was perfect. It was great. I was a little on the edge. I went out, drove out to Jersey, and we had a great time. Chef, thank you for that. My family, thank you for that great experience.
You're welcome, Jason. You're welcome.
I want to jump right into the interview and just say you've made some great strides in the past two or three decades with all your experience and now you're operating David Burke is a global brand. How have you seen since you came back and you went to CIA and you were in France since you came back and started your career and you're working in the city? How have you seen the city change over the past few decades?
Well, when I started cooking in New York City, or when I got out of the Culinary Institute of America, was in 1982. It's funny because I stopped by my restaurant, Dave Burke Townhouse, this morning for brunch, and one of my instructors was there, which was great. And to see he's retiring, this was one of his retirement lunches. So time flies. When I came to New York, it was in 1985. I had gone to Europe after school. And I started working with, it was 84, I was working with Daniel Blue for a little while, and I went to the River Cafe as a sous chef.
And you got three stars. You got three stars there.
Yeah, we did, yes. River Cafe was an American restaurant, one of the first American restaurants, Gotham Bar and Grill, Four Seasons, maybe 21 Club were the first real American restaurants that had real credibility in New York City for fine dining and creativity and competing with back then, which was when you came out of school, you had to work in a French restaurant to get the real, you know, to be considered a cook on its way to being a chef, you know. And so what had changed is along the ethnic stuff came, you know, we started getting some Southwestern food popping up, Arizona 206, Bobby Flay started doing some stuff at Miracle Grill, and this goes way back. And as things started changing, where you didn't have to go work at a French restaurant so much to get credit for being a good cook / on your way to being a chef. Of course, the ingredients have changed. The perception of what chefs do has changed. And the opportunities, forget about it, that has just gone through the roof with the opportunities of putting a white jacket on versus back then.
Do you have a soft spot for any of your places now? I know you worked when you were a kid at the location that I was talking about in New Jersey, but I know they're all like children, but do you jump around from place to place? Because when I spoke to you on Friday, you were in the middle of service, and I was waiting, you know, we're doing a pre-interview, and I was like, where is this guy? And then I figured you were driving, you know, maybe in a Ferrari in Monaco, but no, you were in the kitchen, waiting, like, you know, I heard, you know, stuff clicking in the background. You were right before service, so. Yeah. Is there any?
Well,
place?
That was at David Burke Kitchen, which I'm heading to now. We have a wedding there. That's in the James Hotel in Soho. That's our baby. That's our newest place.
So hot right
now. And today, actually, you know, it's funny because today would have been. We have a huge garden. There's a wedding there today, which was risky, but he's one of my chefs, so to book a wedding outdoors this time of year. But we've had a good October. I don't have a favorite, but the Rumson from Fromagerie, which it took Al Colucci and mom, I guess.
Yeah.
For her birthday is in Rumson, New Jersey. I just happen to be in Alpine right now, so I was going to interrupt you when you were speaking.
Tell Bruce Springsteen I said hello.
Tell us. Fromagerie is a restaurant that is dear to my heart because I worked there as a high school kid, and it's one of the first places I really started appreciating food.
How do you feel about a lot of these kids that are coming out of school? Because you came up like I did. You came up, I mean, you studied and stuff, but you did have the sort of grassroots, you know, washing dishes and stuff. And you get a lot of these kids that come up, they watch a few food TV shows, and then they go and they study, and they get some, you know, they get the exact stuff. They have the stage with Danielle. They go to Noma or wherever else, and then they show up to you, and they've never really gotten dirty. They have the experience. How do you deal with that? Because you kind of, you know, you get dirt, you know, dirty kind of chef.
Yeah, I, you know, it's a little hard, and I hate to sound like an old, like my father. It ain't the same when I, you know what I mean. But it's, I think I think the best way, and I say it to a lot of friends of mine that kids want to go to cooking school and all that, the best thing is you really got to dig in and find out if you have the true passion for it. Some people, it looks like a sexy job. It really isn't. But it is a tremendous job if you have the passion for it, because it's really, it's like playing, it's like, to me, it's like being an athlete. I get to play with food as an athlete gets to play with football or basketball. It's not as fun as it sounds every day. You're going to have the tough days. But it's really more of a passionate profession because you got to, it's a lifestyle. If you really, I think if you want to be really good at it, it's a lifestyle. It has to be put way up there with what you're going to be doing on a daily basis. It's not a, I think, thank God it's Friday kind of lifestyle. So the youngsters that come out, some are different than others, and some walk into a New York City restaurant, and it's a little shocking when it's, you know, you tell them it's going to be a 70-hour work week, and you're going to be on your feet in the heat, and don't think about going to your sister's wedding, ever.
You know? I'm talking now with Chef David Burke. Chef David Burke has become an industry within an industry. His crusades in France after his graduation from CIA brought him back to New York City, and he's been pushing forward ever since. Chef Burke's food challenges the public, but also creates a level of comfort that transcends the palate. You spoke a little bit about art and collecting art, because we both have that passion, and you said you couldn't really explain it, and a lot of chefs have these outlets of high creativity if you play guitar or this, and I know you paint sometimes, but you also collect art. Can you, is that you also sort of fulfilling that creative edge that you need to have out there, or what's that about?
Yeah, you know, I started, and it's funny, there was a guy, I met an art a dealer from Staten Island years ago, named Michael Donato, and he sort of bringing me pieces. And I was always interested in art, but I think I can paint better than I can draw. I can't draw, but I started sketching my own menus. And we all, you know, as chefs, we usually sketch plates out because we want to tell the cooks and the chefs, here's where I want to do. So you kind of make it like a little diagram. And I started messing around with some of that. But then I started collecting stuff. I was working a tremendous amount of hours, and I'd come home and, you know, you're literally exhausted. And I put a couple pieces on the wall, and I started to me, it was like a little stress reliever looking at great art. Trujillo, a great glass blower, his books are on my table. And sometimes I just page through, and you look at, I think there's a lot to do with art and the art of food together. And sometimes it's just another way of, I use it as a relaxation thing to look at great art or to imagine what was going through their head when they did it or how they designed it and things like that. I'm not a, I have nice pieces, but I don't know the history of art like most people would think. I'm more of a guy that I know what kind of wine I like, but I don't collect that passionately. I see something I like, and I usually will buy it or say if I can.
Well, Chef, I just wanted to thank you for your time today on Sunday. I know you have really busy weekends. I'd like to follow up with you in a few months. Other than that, any new future projects coming on you'd like to talk about, or...
I'm working on retail stuff, some retail products right now.
The spray.
We got some exciting stuff. Tell Bruce Funk I said hello, and I'd like to touch. I'm working on a special beef project that he was finding
right
has
now.
To do with dry aging beef with salt.
How are you, David?
Bruce, say hello.
So happy to hear you.
Yeah, he's in the studio.
Yeah, I'm so good here talking to you, man. I haven't seen you for so long.
I have a little bit of a bad connection with you, but I want to say hi when I heard your name being introduced and everyone else that's on the show today.
Thanks, Chef.
I would love to touch base with you about this beef thing I'm working on.
Well, when you're all ready to talk about it, contact me. I thank you for your time. Have a great service if you're going as a service. If not, we'll talk to you in a few
months. Yeah, we'll go. All right.
We'll talk to you in a few months.
Jason, I appreciate it.
Bye-bye. Anytime. Anytime. Wow, David Burke, man. That's awesome. He really was. I called him on Friday. I waited about 2 hours for the pre-interview. I wasn't mad or anything, but I just couldn't figure out. I'm like, oh, it's Friday night. Where is this guy? I'm just like, look, you know, think my mind just strays. And you know, he was in service. He called me. We did a great interview. He called me about, we spoke about 40 minutes. And he's so resilient. I mean, he just pops up, you know, every few years. He just has a great new project. We go into our first guest. I wanted to talk a little bit about. I just wanted to defend Danny Meyer for a second. There was a clip going around YouTube, and I guess Occupy Wall Street was sending some of their people into Danny Meyer's restaurants. I'm not taking any sides on this story. I'm just defending Danny Meyer as somebody who knows a lot of people that work for him. So I'm going to play a clip here. It's some people that went into, I think, Union Square Cafe that were protesting his affiliation with an auction house.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I have a message from the people of Occupy Wall Street. We're here tonight to let you know about the practices of Danny Meyer, who owns this restaurant. It turns out Danny Meyer is on the board of Sotheby's, and Sotheby's is a union buster, and we do not stand for that. We will be here to make sure that Danny Meyer is uncomfortable, and anyone who supports him is uncomfortable.
Now, I don't know the gist of this, but I will say this. I saw this and I was really upset. Now, I've worked for a lot of different restaurateurs. All have been great. I've been blessed. And there's a lot of bad people out there. Danny Meyer is one of the is a class act. He treats his people with respect. He's given more work and done more for the city than a lot of people. He has supported the Union Square Green Market, that has supported farmers for decades. He's come here and he's a class act. Now, he might be on a board of something that he might have gotten involved in because he's involved in art, but you know, you can't line item everything that you're involved in. I'm sure Sotheby's, you know, has some issues with something that's going on, but the fact that these people are going into his restaurant and doing this, it's very upsetting. I just wanted to talk about that because it made me upset. I'm upset about it because I know a ton of people that work for this guy. He is great to work for. So I'm moving on. I wanted to go into somebody who is our art specialist. She was on the show. She actually works for Bert Wolf's Art Cop. She's a research analyst. Her name is Katie Howard. Now, Katie, real quick to actually make light of this entire situation. Now, I had you on the guest when I was co-hosting Patrick Martin's show, the main course. Now, we went out afterwards, and I thought you were mad at me. Do you want to know why I thought you were mad at me?
Why? I don't know.
You are of the Jewish descent.
Yes.
Okay. And I went to your party, and I brought bacon. now, I brought bacon in the sense that we were just at Patrick Martin's kiosk of where he stores a lot of his stuff,
yeah,
and he gave me this really great stuff, and then I gave it to you. I said, hey, listen, you know, guys, try this out, and everybody ate it.
Oh, it was delicious.
Now,
it was some of the best bacon I've ever had.
Now, take my Catholic guilt, your Jewish guilt, and then my, you know, my mind of overthinking stuff and snowball into the fact that I didn't think you didn't get back to me because of that. So I sent out an email about the morning after wanting to have everyone involved that I really respected, and I wanted you to be sort of, when there's a lot of art in restaurants, and have you come in and critique stuff.
Yeah.
Now, that's not the case, right?
What do you mean?
No, you weren't mad at that, right?
No, I wrote this really long thank you letter for having me on your show last time, and I was going through my drafts or unsent messages and realized it just had never been sent. And so it was just completely embarrassing because, you know, you were so gracious in having me on, and then my thank you letter never got there. It was very embarrassing.
Well, the past is behind us, and you're here now. We have a guest on. Graydon Carter has been gracious enough to let some of his people from the Monkey Bar here next week, and they're going to be in studio. But I really wanted to, rather than just do a quick, hey, look, these are the people we're having next week. The Monkey Bar has a fascinating mural on the walls. It deals with a lot of New York personalities, a lot of people that are in jazz. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, the mural was done for the reopening of the Monkey Bar in 2009 when they restored it. And it was done by Edward Sorrell. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. Who's a very famous cartoonist who does work for The New Yorker and Vanity Fair. And he did this mural that's kind of, you know, nostalgic and looking back on the very famous stars of jazz and movies in the 1930s and 40s, especially because those are the people who used to frequent the bar in its heyday.
And these are like sort of what I think of when you say stuff like that. I think of them in a tavern, just like places where people came to and like hung out.
Yeah.
And then you hear these voices and you're like, oh, wait, they used to hang out. But the Monkey Bar was a midtown place where a lot of people that worked in, you know,
Broadway. Yeah, it was like the it place to be. And actually, you know, what's his name? Tennessee Williams actually died in the Monkey Bar.
He did. I saw this. Yeah. I was reading this. And it was like a weird complication. They couldn't figure it out.
Yeah, he choked on some very strange object. I believe it was an eyedropper.
Well, yeah. I will say this. He choked on something that's nothing on the menu right now.
This is true. So it was not even food that he choked on.
Did you feel fulfilled when you were seeing the art? Because it seemed very freehand.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was very much kind of nostalgic and very great, like grand, when you walk into the room. And, you know, Edward Sorrell, you know, does this very specific style of, like, you know, just very wavy pen and ink brushstrokes, and he actually calls it spontaneous direct drawing. So, you know, he has a very specific style that, you know, lends really well to portraying all these greats of the jazz era.
Well, thank you, Katie, for your insight into the Monkey Bar. Once again, Monkey Bar is going to be on the show next week. They're our guests. We're having the general manager and the chef on from Monkey Bar on the morning after. I want to cut right into someone who is an alumni from a high school I went to, Monsignor Farrell, and we just kind of crossed paths because we were dealing with the same sales representative from a company that we both deal with. Her name is Beverly Casper Blair. She said, "You got to talk to this guy. He went to that same high school as you." And I'm like, "Who is it?" She's like, "Ed McFarlane from Ed's Lobster Bar." Now, it hit two chords. One, I went to school in Maine, so I feel like I know a lot about lobster, and then Monsignor Farrell was probably some of the best years of my life. Ed, you're in studio. What's up, man?
Yeah, not much. Just enjoying myself today. Nice Sunday afternoon.
Thanks for coming in on your day off. I appreciate it. I know today's like your sort of like relaxing day.
Yeah,
right?
I got to drive through a couple states and a bunch of boroughs to get here, but I made the trip. It was scary, but it was okay.
When did you? You have a great history and a great under a lot of great chefs, but what prompted you to do the whole, like, why lobster? Why, why Lafayette Street? What had that happen?
You know, lobster was just a passion, and in my career, I gravitated towards seafood little by little. I worked under at Picholine with Terrence Brennan. Dave Pasternak was the chef de cuisine for my time while I was there, and I really learned a lot about fish with him, and fished with him a couple of times, and my career just gravitated in that direction. And you know, when I left there, I bounced around a lot, and at some point I realized I got to get into a good seafood restaurant, and I moved in that direction, and I realized that seafood was my passion, but there was nothing I liked to eat more than lobster.
Really? And was that just because through cooking it, or just like being at a party or being at home and eating lobster or whatever?
I think it was through cooking it. I like the delicateness and the simpleness in the preparation. And you don't have to go crazy to make a great seafood item.
Now, we talk a lot about just personalities and individuals here, but what's a good, just a quick fire for people, what's a good cooking time for boiling or broiling, or what's...
If you're going to boil a lobster, you just have to cook it till it floats. Till it floats.
Okay.
It'll pop right up to the top.
What if you don't have one of those huge pots that'll see when it floats? Like, is there like just a specific time?
You know,
I've been in that situation.
About 10 minutes for a pound and a half lobster, I'd like to cook it.
And pound and a half, going to school in Maine, seems to be the flavor, best flavor profile.
You know, I think anything between a pound and a half and 2 pounds is a perfect lobster. When you start to go over that size, the meat cooks at too inconsistent of a rate, and that's when you start to get a tougher tail because you're waiting for the claws to cook.
There's two other locations now, but I was confused. There's one that's a kiosk, and there's another one that's, I think, a legit restaurant. I have never gone to that. I've been to the one on Lafayette Street. And what's that? One's a seasonal?
So down at Battery Park in front of the North Cove Marina, at 200 Vesey Street. We do Ed's Lobster Bar Kiosk, which is seasonal from May through October. And then about 6 weeks ago, during Hurricane Irene, we opened up Ed's Lobster Bar Annex, which is a full sit-down restaurant, bar, etc., at 25 Clinton Street.
And you say during the hurricane was just de facto, but was it the...
Well, my opening day was the 25th of August.
That's so true. For our listeners, restaurant that are not restaurant people, the restaurant people are so superstitious. So if something can happen, it will happen. And did you, what was that week like?
You know, well, I did a bunch of pre-opening parties, and we opened on the 25th, and in the mass exodus of New York with the closing of public transportation. And I ended up closing the whole weekend after that because my employees couldn't get in. So that was kind of a weird time to open.
We talked a little bit. I played a clip from Danny Meyer on talking about New York City restaurateurs, how the city has made them honest. There's no real shortcuts away about running a business in New York, especially in restaurants. And how many people do you employ?
Between my three lobster locations and my pizzeria, it's about 55 employees.
What's this pizzeria?
I have a pizzeria at the World Financial Center called Caravelli's.
Oh, I know that place. Yeah. I mean, is that another... Oh, wait. Oh, I knew what I'd ask you. Lee's or Danino's?
Lee's.
Yes! All right. So people that don't know anything what we're talking about, I had it on my sheet, but I've been just not looking at it. There are two... we're both Staten Island natives. There are two pizzerias that you kind of go back and forth on if you're from Staten Island. One is Lee's Tavern. It's on Garrison Avenue, corner of Henry Street. The other is Danino's. I think it's on Port Richmond Avenue. And, you know, you kind of get it. Like, you can sum up somebody in 2 seconds about where they come from. Did you grow up near Lee's, or...?
You know, I grew up in Richmond Town, and then I later on moved over to Westerly, but you always make the trek to Lee's. I'd much rather eat Lee's pizza than Danino's.
And is the pizzeria, was it just what your interpretation of pizzeria was, or are you trying to...
My original background is in pizza. I worked, after high school in pizzeria for 4.5 years.
Which place?
Classic Pizza,
yeah,
in Richmond Town. And I wouldn't say I do anything like they do there, but... I like to think I do a very good job making pizza. We do a nice thin crust, and it's traditional. You know, think of a traditional walk-up slice place, get Parmesan heroes and cold cuts, etc., stuff like that.
I'm talking with Ed McFarlane from Ed's Lobster Bar. He has three locations in Manhattan. He also has another pizzeria, which we just... Exclusive, actually. But it's been open for a while, so it's not really exclusive. But we're just talking the business. Is there any other future projects coming up, or...?
There's a lot of future plans. You know, I'm pretty young in my ownership career, but definite look to marketing some products, pickles, and sauces that I think we do pretty well at the Lobster Bar.
Yeah, I mean, because you're sourcing out of Maine. Now, if anyone knows about, you know, buying lobsters in supermarkets, there are two major locations in North America where lobster comes from. One is Canadian lobsters, and the other one is Maine. You kind of play a tennis match with, just quality on both locations, is there a specific flavor profile that's different on them, or...
You know, I don't want to knock anybody out the box,
100%,
but
no.
I think that in general, the colder water lobsters, the Canadian hard shells, yeah, tend to be a little sweeter, and you get a lot better yield when you're cooking the lobster. But a lot of it goes into, as far as purchasing goes, into pricing,
yeah,
and the season that you're purchasing the lobsters in. So I would venture to say I probably have a pretty much 50-50 split throughout the year of where my lobster's coming from.
Well, Ed, thank you for your time. Is there any? Can you give us the locations of all three spots?
Sure. It's Ed's Lobster Bar, 222 Lafayette Street in Soho. Ed's Lobster Bar Annex at 25 Clinton Street on the Lower East Side, and Ed's Lobster Bar Kiosk at 200 Vesey Street in front of North Cove Marina.
Thank you a million. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to talk to 86list.com and find out about the hot job of the week. And we're also going to talk to Chris Baer, chef of Brooklyn Lauder.
Lemon yellow sun on
He went to a, you know, all the greats came out of that school, Monsignor Farrell High School. He's a class act. I don't know if anyone, Lobster fans or what they want. We're going to go into our next guest, Laura Wirtz from 86list.com with the hot job of the week. Laura Wirtz, are you there?
I'm here. How are you, Jason?
Laura Wirtz, hot job of the week. Go ahead.
All right. This week's hot job comes from the Smiths. An American brasserie. They have their original location on 3rd Avenue, and they've just opened a new Midtown location. So they're searching for all front-of-house positions. They're looking for experienced servers and bartenders, bussers, runners, and host staff.
Really, really. And then this place just opened, right? I mean, it's a pretty hot place. So hot right now.
Absolutely. And they're looking for people to come in and apply in person. So if you're interested, you can visit their new location at 956 2nd Avenue at 51st Street.
Laura, I also wanted to thank you for a couple of reasons. One, for doing the 86list.com every week, but you guys were covered by the Post last week. What was that article about?
It was great. That was very exciting. They profiled Greg, the founder, and they just talked about what
your fiancé
were hoping to accomplish with 86list. So it was a really nice article, and we've been hearing a lot of great feedback about it. So it's been very exciting.
And Greg is your partner and le fiancé.
That is correct.
And to me, the New York Post is my paper of record, at least page 6. So I thank you again. And the job is Smith's Midtown Restaurant. Just, I mean, I think if you went up there, you contacted 86list.com in any way, you would... they'll find everything. Thanks again, Laura. Hot job of the week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thanks, Jason.
Here we are. We're at Roberta's, broadcasting live, Heritage Radio Network. Jack Inslee is on the 1 and 2s, meaning he's on 2 computers. I wanted to thank him for turning me to iTunes this week. I said in the beginning of the show, but I really have to emphasize this. Anyone that's listening to the show, obviously live, tune into Heritage, always tune into Heritage, but iTunes, we got really great numbers. I mean, there's thousands of people with, you know, something to say, but I just feel like everyone that's contributing to the show are just, they're just a reservoir of information, and we're not just specifically sticking to New York City. One of those people is someone who's sitting across from me, someone I have a tremendous amount of respect for. He's an understated chef in the fact that he's one of those people that's not going to go out there and, you know, be Twittering 100 times and, you know, on his Facebook. But I've worked with him, and he's extremely talented. The chef's name is Christopher Bear. He is running the helm of a popular spot on Flatbush between 6th Avenue and Bergen Street in Park Slope. Chef, thank you for doing the show.
Thanks for having me.
We wanted to jump in just into ingredients that are, you know, it's the fall in New York, and you'll hate it in January in terms of the ingredients because you'll be around them forever. But, you know, New York City, there's an abundance of everything that comes around, you know, squashes and stuff. Is there something that you think of right away that...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, the progression of the seasons is happening, and kind of we're in the spot where, you know, kind of all the vegetables just got heavier. Everything's winter squash, you know, beets, Brussels sprouts, stuff like that. So we have a really close relationship with our farmers. So every Saturday morning, sometimes Wednesday, I'll go to Union Square. But, the gist of the Brooklyn Lard is kind of like, you know, focusing on the seasonal, presenting it very simply. You know, so we take great pride in our ingredients. We go the extra mile. Like I literally, you know, carry 300 pounds of Brussels sprouts back from the farmer's market every Saturday. So it's, you know, it's something that we obviously care a lot about. I'm not just kind of picking up the phone and getting some vegetables from Peru. This is all, you know, I know the guy who grows this stuff in New Jersey or Vermont or Pennsylvania or whatever. So, yeah, it's good to have that kind of like, you know, close contact and kind of just like feature what's the best. I mean, it makes my job easier in a way. I mean, the vegetables are those vegetables are the best right now. So, you know, I'm not going to put summer squash on the menu right now or tomatoes, even though they're still kind of around. But it's, you know, the best of the season.
And there's a misconception about a lot of places that that people, when they go shopping, I mean, there's your supermarkets that you see the key foods of the world. And then even now there's your Whole Foods and your Trader Joe's. But there's a lot of these markets that you have that are in your neighborhood that I will defend because I procure foods for a living. I've done it for a decade, and the $50 that you're paying for it is not going into the it's not even going into rent. It's not going into the owner's pocket. It's providing extra money for the farmers, for the cheesemakers, for your guys' extra time, and maybe you need to send a truck to go and pick up stuff. And it's night and day. People, listen to me. It is night and day. There's no, you know, cheating it with some of the stuff that you guys are serving. And I want to also emphasize the fact that this is a prepared food store that does a high end. And then high end, I don't want to turn it off to the fact that people are paying more money. It's just high end, and it's very well procured.
Yeah, I think, like you said earlier, curated is a word that really goes into effect of the larder. I mean, there's a group of people who are dedicated to featuring, it's, I mean, the things that they like, but the featuring the best of the best. And I mentioned last time on the show, like, you know, at other jobs I've had, you know, I pick up the phone and I call, I have one guy for vegetables, I have one guy for fish, one guy for meat. At the larder, we have hundreds and hundreds of vendors. Like, if I need hazelnuts, I pick up the phone and I call this person. If I need this, I call the it's all individual attention, and it's all about the best of the best. And I think, you know, high-end is a word that could be used, but even before I worked there and in my first couple of months, I thought it was, I was like, wow, this place is really expensive. Like, I can't believe how expensive it is. Like, I can't believe how busy it is.
Well, I always make the joke, you guys get your pricing from the airport.
Yeah. that's, you know, I can see that logic. But now that I'm the guy in charge of assigning the prices to everything, for the amount of labor and the attention to detail and stuff like that, it really is equal. And I think people appreciate that because, you know, we make peanut butter, we make almond butter, we make cashew butter, and the ingredients are peanuts and salt. That's it.
Yeah.
There's no stabilizers. There's no preservatives. There's no anything. And I think that being, you know, 2+ years in, the larder's been open, people at first weren't quite sure what they were getting into. But now that they can come in and be certain that they're having, you know, hormone-free, pesticide-free, naturally raised, pastured eggs, like all these things that we spend our time finding the best of the best, so they don't have to. I think people have started to warm up to that idea that they'll pay $20 a pound for vegetables. If, you know, if those vegetables are special, and each one is, it's not like going to, you know, a large chain supermarket or even another place, and it's a crapshoot. It could be stuff from Chile. It could be, you know, who knows, you know. I think Americans kind of like, you know, want vegetable, you know, want tomatoes in January, and they don't understand that there's a kind of a seasonal thing, and we kind of abide by a very strict seasonal mantra that, you know, it's good when it's good, and that's all, you know.
What's the exact address of the place?
It's 228 Flatbush. It's right in the corner of Bergen.
And you guys are Monday through Sunday?
Yeah, we're open every day, and we close a little bit early. We close at 8 on Sundays, but beyond that, we're open all the time.
And you're affiliated with a place that I go to at least once a month, I go to Brooklyn Lot at least once a week, but Franny's.
Yeah, Franny's up the street, also on Flatbush across on the other side, and they're, Franny's been open for about 7 years now, 7 years plus. Pizza, pasta, unbelievable. That's kind of how I got into the larder family. I used to go there. Just kind of, it's what I love out of a restaurant. You know, it's simple food, simple pizza. Just kind of the Italian mentality. Like, focus on quality, focus on simplicity. There's no bells and whistles. You know, it's you know, beets on toast on a plate. Pizza, not cut. Just like, you know, simple. Don't mess with it. You know.
You should talk to Arthur Schwartz. Actually, I gave Arthur Schwartz a pasta, which is that you guys sell, the pasta mancini, or mm-hmm. Because he had never had it before, and he loved it. But I really want to emphasize. First of all, I want to thank you for coming out. I'm talking with Chris Baer from Brooklyn Lauder. Chris Baer was originally a selection I had when I was co-hosting Patrick Martin's show, The Main Chorus, and Chris has, you know, is finally at the helm of a of a show or a restaurant or whatever you want to call it. But Chris is extremely talented, and I really wanted to have him back just to emphasize the fact of his creativity. And Chris, thank you for coming in. The studio is always welcome to you. We're friends outside of here. And anything else that you guys have coming up?
I mean, right now we just kind of we're about to launch into our holiday season, which is, you know, obviously our biggest part of the year. So, you know, right now we're kind of focusing. We got a, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up, so we're doing all kinds of special menu of boning out whole turkeys, rolling them up, stuffing them, stuff like that, so people can come through and buy their entire Thanksgiving dinner, even Thanksgiving.
And we'll deliver it. And you'll deliver it.
Yeah, we have a full delivery service. Yeah, catering is something that's really coming up for us. So, the holidays are looming, so we're getting our stuff together for that.
Anyone looking to see up-and-coming chefs, Google Chef Chris Baer. He's a chef of Brooklyn Lauder, and I want to thank him for coming out to the Morning After. We're going to take a break now. We're going to come back with a couple of guests. One of them is Bruce Funk. He's a legend. David Burke knows him. He stopped this whole interview for him. The Morning After. Feistiness here in the studio. I was just congratulating Chris Baer. He's just, you know, he's doing great. He's running the show over there. You got to pop in there. But I really wanted to go into my next guest. I titled you, Bruce, the elder statesman of the meat industry. Bruce has been working for in food for what, 30 years, 40 years?
100.
honestly.
30 years, almost.
30 years. And I met Bruce when I was a very green purchaser for Drew Nieporn at Tribeca Grill. And he made me feel so comfortable in my own skin. And we become friends since then. He calls me, and he calls every chef in New York City on their birthdays. I was in Florida this year. You called me. And I just wanted to say thank you. What's the company you're working for right now?
A-Stein. We're in Brooklyn.
A-Stein. And now A-Stein is a company he's working for. They do specialize in a lot of different stuff.
We are probably one of the last companies that bring in not boxed meat, but hanging meat.
So you're buying sides of beef.
Whole sides of beef, whole lambs, the entire breakdown. We do our own dry aging. We do our own portion control, which is, it seems to be going in that direction.
So people that aren't listening, there's a lot of companies that are doing they do cryo stuff. So you come in and there's no butchers involved. Stuff that shows up to them and they're just basically middling a product.
Right.
Not that that's wrong or whatever. It's a whole other side of the business. But what Stein is doing, they're doing sort of a traditional thing. When you were at 14th Street, now you can probably pick up Giselle Bundchen and get in your Ferrari in 14th Street. But that's a whole nother. But when you came up and you were there in that whole area, what was that like? Because people always ask me about it.
Well, back in the good old days, and I really say the good old days because there was a much more family-related unit between all of the purveyors, which encompassed probably about 250 or 300 meat purveyors in the entire meatpacking district, which runs from about, say, 16th Street to Gansvoort Street, Gansvoort meaning Goose Market in the old days, from the west side to Hudson Street. And it was infiltrated with every type of purveyor, from lamb to pork houses. Whole veal used to be brought in years and years ago, prior to the when the High Line was operating, which is many, many years ago. This was a slaughtering area.
Now, two things I want you to talk about. One is any people that come to New York and want to do a tour of meat and stuff, and they're driving up the West Side Highway, they'll see something. Maybe it's gone, but if they look to the right, they'll see it's called Premier Veal. There's always a place where you see like young cattle and stuff painted on there. That's kind of where it started. But then also there's a High Line. So if you're walking onto this park, anyone who lives in New York City or travels here, Bruce, what was that originally set up for? That was for the meat coming from the Midwest, right?
Well, grains were brought in. In fact, my dad, many, many years ago, used to take me into the city. He did the promotion for the National Biscuit Company, which presently is Chelsea Markets. That was the entire facility where they made Oreos and Malamars and Ritz crackers.
Yeah.
And I used to come in with him, and they used to bring that stuff in, all of their ingredients, the wheats and grains, and meats as well, where the utilization of that High Line was vibrant for producing the ingredients.
But before you got into meat, you were you always told me you were a tennis champion.
Well,
I believe. But you play a lot of tennis. But how did you, like, what was that whole genesis? Because you're a fascinating
person. I'll give you a quick background. I graduated in hotel and restaurant management. I was the second graduating class in City Tech, which is the same as Michael Monaco. He graduated probably in the 80s. I graduated in 1954, was drafted for the Korean War, served time cooking in Heidelberg, Germany, came back, sold for Hobart Restaurant Machines.
Wow.
Which is
still around.
Don't
get the five corn.
And started to get involved a little bit more seriously into tennis. A neighbor said, can you teach my son?
Yeah.
I taught him for $3 an hour, and there it went for the next 22 years.
But what you're a food guy, and you established for me the cocktail hour. 6 o'clock for you is cocktail hour. Every time I would talk to you, you'd have a
dry beefy martini
at 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
But so obviously you've always had affinity to food. How'd you jump into it? What had that happen?
What brought me into the industry, a friend of mine who was an art director, also a amateur cook, asked me if I would assist him in a chili contest at the James Beard House.
What year was this?
Yeah, this was probably late 70s, early 80s possibly. We won. It's funny, before I had even heard of Bobby Flay, he was one of the judges.
Wow.
And we won that.
He was paying people then to get on TV. Oh, wait, sorry. My mic's still on.
Yeah. Shortly thereafter, I wrote a letter to a half a dozen different companies, purveyors, Wills and Cisco, and I hit on Long Island Beef, which no longer exists, and they were on the
IRA.
That's right. They were on the West Side Highway. And I wrote a letter giving no dates or anything, just that I wanted to follow a different star. He said, "How much do you need to live on?" And there she wrote.
I have a legend to me, Bruce Funk in studio. He has been I hate to say a salesperson in the meat world, but he's just been a friend for a lot of chefs for about 30 years in the meat community. And now I'd hate to say it because you're not even close to this at the sort of retire, you know, at the end. But if you're talking about like where food is now from when you started, and you can just talk about that.
Right now, I'm enjoying the evolution of the food industry spreading out where Chris just previously said he's in Flatbush. Yeah. I was brought up in Flatbush. Flatbush would never be heard of for some fine food.
Yeah.
And now this is an example. It has spread because of real estate, the same as the shifting of the meatpacking district to the Bronx and to Brooklyn. Because of real estate, there is no longer a meatpacking district. There's only about a dozen places that exist. but also the restaurant industry. If you look at all of the new areas, the Lower East Side.
Roberta's.
Just today see such a crowded, successful place in a basically obscure area.
Yeah.
And this was what makes it so great. Of course, real estate has necessitated this change.
Well, we're here now again with Bruce. Bruce, I wanted to thank you just for coming down. I wanted the people to hear your story, and my studio is always welcome to you. Can you just sort of talk a plug about the company you work for, Stein, and just give them the phone number if anyone wants to contact them? Contact you. No, give me your cell phone, because somebody will step on your feet and try to call me.
You can call me at 917-806-4416. I'd be happy to discuss any of your needs of from poultry to lamb to pig. We also now have a kosher division, which is a separate division on the premises, but with under strict adherence.
Well, yeah, good. I have to stop by there in case I go to another Katie Howard party. That was a joke. Now she officially hates me. But for
communion, I'm not kosher.
No, I'm kidding. But so Bruce, thank you once again. I think a lot of people, myself included, have a special place for you in their heart, and I love you. I think you're an amazing person, and you're one of the reasons why that this business in New York City is. It has nothing. I mean, restaurants have a lot to do with it, but there's the personalities that keep it growing. And my studio is always open to you. We're gonna take a break now. We're gonna just have a couple plugs. We're gonna talk to them. What's the thing? Onde Le Monde Este es Michel Bourgeois, which translates to Where in the World is Matthew Bourgeois. All right, we're tight on time. The show went over because I have to say those are some great people. I just couldn't cut them off. Real quick, there's a segment we call "Where in the World is Matt Bourgeois?" But I was waking up on Monday and I realized that annoying guy Matt Lauer has the same thing, the Carmen Sandiego bit. So I just translated it to French, which I believe is "Onde le monde is Michel Bourgeois."
Merci,
and Michel Bourgeois, Michel, I had you flying to two places. One was a burger place in Austin, Texas called Hop Daddy. The other one is Hop Daddy. And the other one is the Vortex in Atlanta,
correct,
Georgia. Briefly, two places. Tell me about them.
Hop Daddy was fantastic. We were driving by looking for a burger joint, a colleague of mine, and we noticed a line right out the door. So we immediately stopped. And we found out they're doing all of their proceeds were going to the relief for all the wildfires down in the hill country of Texas.
Does that happen all the time?
Happens a lot, but this summer it was really bad. A lot of people lost their homes. But so the restaurant was doing a great thing, and it happened to be a fantastic burger restaurant.
What's the burger you had?
I had the Buffalo Bill burger, which was really good with blue cheese and Frank's hot sauce.
Is that the American Icon Buffalo Bill or the guy from Silence of the Lambs?
No, I think they were going off the American Icon. They had a lot of the burgers that had the names of icons, like the Janis Joplin with hemp seed and all that good stuff. It was
and
pretty hip little spot.
Their menu looked amazing. I'm actually going to contact them this week.
You should.
Tell them your official review. But there was also the Vortex in Atlanta, Georgia. And that place was trippy. What's
yeah,
that?
The Vortex is great. There's actually, I love the Vortex too so much that I went to both locations. There's two. One in Little Five Points, then one in downtown. And I go to the Vortex.
Oh, wait. Atlanta is trying to take our Five Points?
Little Five Points.
Oh, okay.
Little Five Points.
Oh, whoa.
Whole different thing.
We have the Five Points here.
Whole different thing.
Okay, go on.
So, yeah, Little Five Points location is my favorite because you can notice it driving down the street by the oversized skull entrance. It's
Are you serious?
It's a large skull with swirly eyeballs and all that great stuff. So you go in there. It's a no-nonsense drinking kind of burger joint with tattoos and everything. And
what'd you have there?
I had the Elvis burger, which is really
good. Peanut butter on there?
Peanut butter, banana,
Are you
and
serious?
Bacon.
I was being
this is the Elvis burger.
Well, how was it?
It was delicious. I had had it years before, and I remember, I think they must have changed the peanut butter, because this time around it was good, but the peanut butter was a little I don't know. I think just because changing the peanut butter was a little dry and the whole burger itself was a little dry. But otherwise, I seek it out. I love it.
Well, we're talking here with the segment called Onde le monde est monsieur
monsieur.
Monsieur. Matt, where are you going to be next week?
Next week, I will be in Boston.
Oh, so forgetting Boston. Yeah, Boston. So we'll send you to a place to there. Once, I want to thank Jack Inslee for an amazing producing, because, I mean, I really feel like he's helping us out with the iTunes thing, on top of the fact that he's doing some great mixing. I want to thank a couple of other people, John Paradiso Jewelry on Bowery and Houston. I also want to thank, there's a play called The Ryan Case, featuring Dina Messery. It starts at 5 p.m. at Fontaine. Is Bar on Lower East Side on Eldred and Broom. It's an interactive murder mystery, as there any other, might I say, theater that takes you on into the streets of Lower East Side. And then also I want to thank Julie Saul Gallery. It's on 535 West 22nd Street. She has the Bill Jacobson exhibit. We were there. We're hanging out with Chuck Close. You know, all the big names. She's actually going to be sponsoring a bit the top 10 young 20 and 30-somethings coming up in New York City. This is the morning after. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Bruce Funk, Matthew Bourgeois, Katie Howard, Chris Baer, Ed McFarlane, Chef David Burke, Bennett Jaslik for all producing skills, and Michel Bourgeois. I'm Jason Colucci, Morning After. Thanks for making us number one on iTunes this week.
Listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.